Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are covering the energy sectors. We are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the free newsletter, Eye on Energy, which breaks down the data for the energy sector. And that's where I want to start here, Joseph, is because, look, crude continues to be fairly strong. As we're recording this today, crude is down over 3%, but still holding above that $80 level. The problem is, when I read over some of your comments on the underlying data for the oil sector, that data is not lining up with this generally higher price, and a price that has continued to trend higher. Joseph, break down some of that recent data you have seen and that further confirms, again, that it's not really lining up with this rise in oil price.
Yeah, it's a perception thing versus the reality of the numbers. So what's going on is a perception that because in Europe, they're using a lot of coal, they were worried about Russia, providing sufficient natural gas for this coming winter. And there was a political battle going on between the Greens wanting to, not approve the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And in response, with all the cold weather and the lack of electricity from wind power, they added more coal, which, of course, the Greens would be, shocked by, because they would want to shut down nuclear and coal very quickly. And all of a sudden they realize that, oops, we made a mistake. And now we're starting to see announcements that Russia is going to be providing much more gas, natural gas, to Europe. They're already 15% above a year ago, and there's significant data supporting that. And Nord Stream 2 could add significantly to production in the North Sea if it gets approved in time for the cold weather. There still are some certification issues. The two biggest economies in the world, United States and China, are already seeing demand falling off, and inventories are in good supply. So for 5-6 weeks now, we've had data supporting that there's a sufficient oil available in the United States and Canada, of course. And then in China, they're now selling out some of their oil and diesel from their strategic reserve, because the imports are taking a while to get in. But the key thing is that they're shutting down all the coastal areas of China, because in February you have the Olympics starting in Beijing, and they want clean air, which means they're cutting back and shutting down coal-fired facilities, shutting down industrial plants, which means less consumption. And you're seeing a significant weakness in things like thermal coal prices are down 50%. Steel prices are down 50% because demand is down. But for the U.S. this week, they had a 3.3 million barrel increase in commercial stocks. They were expecting 1.75. That number would have been higher by another 1.5 million because net imports were down by 221,000 barrels on the week per day. So that's another 1.5 million. So you would have had a 4.8 million increase. And we've had consistent increases over time. What the bulls are jumping on is that commercial stocks last week were 434 million, down 50 million from 484 in the prior year during the pandemic. What my issue has been is that 434 this week compares to October, late October of 2019, of 436.9. So we're only, 2.8 million below that. And then if you go to the year before that, 2018, it was only 426. So you've got, 8.1 million barrels more in storage now than you did in 2018, which was a very robust year. The other thing to point out is demand this week was only 19.997 million barrels. That compared to last year, or pre-pandemic year, of 21.6 and 21.3 in 2018. So we're looking at lower demand, about the same amount of inventory, and compared to before the pandemic. And so the days of supply are around 21.4 days, and we were 20.3 days in 2019 and 2018. everybody looks at the number of 25.6 days of inventory from 2020, but I don't think that's an accurate comparison because that was during the pandemic. I think we should be comparing to the strength of the economy pre-pandemic, the demand pre-pandemic, and you'll see that there's sufficient inventories in the United States. And if the Americans really wanted to push the price down, they've been using moral suasion on OPEC to lower the price because it's gouging the economy, and the U.S. is clearly moving into recession from the data that's coming out. And also the joy juice, the monetary heroin, is stopping today. The Federal Reserve said starting in November they're going to take out $15 billion of the $120 billion each month that they've had in tapering. So by the end of June, the whole tapering will be gone, which means monetary heroin will be gone. And given Biden lost at least the Virginia governorship to the Republicans, and the question mark of New Jersey is a wild one. I didn't even expect that to be close. It looks like the Republicans are going to be, especially the moderates, are going to be pushing against anything that Biden wants to do. And the moderates in the Democratic Party, Manchin and Sinema and the others, now see the Republicans winning in the suburbs, which is important for them to get reelected. And they're not going to be so easy to give in to the progressives of the left wing of the Democratic Party. And if Biden doesn't seem to get something going in the next few weeks, once you get into year end or even mid, you know, Christmas time, if there's no policy approval on these two bills, the basic infrastructure for roads and bridges and stuff that most people would agree to on both sides of the aisle between the Democrats and Republicans, and the human infrastructure, which is the progressives' desires, if those bills don't get passed, then he's a lame duck president starting January, because the fight for the midterm election starts and the Republicans are coming out of the gate with a big win in Virginia and potentially a second win in New Jersey. And the big difference is rural America is totally on side with the Republicans. Suburban America is the battleground, and the Republicans seem to have won most of that yesterday.
Yeah, Joseph, there sure are a lot of spinning plates in the air that everybody's trying to keep up in the energy sector. And while there still remains a lot of bulls that are expecting triple-digit oil, a couple of questions I want to ask you relating to which one you think is most important. You know, we've seen countries like Mexico hedging their oil, some say secretly, at $60 to $65. So obviously they were happy with those prices and are anticipating things could pull back some. But you mentioned coal and natural gas. Both of those had really epic runs higher, and then they've both pulled back a lot. So while there's a big movement to stop coal and to reduce coal worldwide, whether it's in Europe or Canada's announced this week they're not going to export coal, do you think the pullback in coal prices will actually underpin more usage of them? And same thing with natural gas. They were up pretty high. There was a lot of speculation in it, and now it's pulled back. Could we see more adoption of nat gas plants and coal plants that take some of the pressure off of the oil prices?
Well, natural gas is much higher than the equivalent oil price, so that's really the key. And the question is, how bad will winter be? How cold will winter be? And will the wind show back up for the renewables, for wind power, which is a big portion of renewables in Europe? So there's a lot of wild cards that you can't really put a button on and say, I believe this, because there's, as you said, too many moving pieces. But I think the fact that Russia is going to get Nord Stream 2 approved, because the Greens, you know, Germany doesn't have an elected government yet. They're still trying to find a coalition. And then, then the question is what policies they agree to. But I think the fact that, prices went up so much for electricity and many utilities went bankrupt in the UK, especially because they had bought and guaranteed to supply, you know, to customers lower natural gas prices than the prices they were paying at the market. And so a lot of those companies have gone bankrupt. And I think we're looking at a number of issues to look at for the next number of months for the price of natural gas and coal and the others is how cold is the winter? And then number two, how much oil, natural gas is pushed through Nord Stream 2 by Russia. And then probably the third one would be how much contribution can renewables make during the next few months. And if those numbers from renewables don't return if Nord Stream doesn't get approved by the Greens, and there's a battleground over that, and that means more use of coal in Poland and Germany and other countries in Europe, then I think we're looking at spikes again. And of course, I think that's going to be a big hurt to economies in Europe, because if you have a certain amount of, you know, production in or revenues or GDP in the pie, and all of a sudden a bigger portion is being used to keep your homes warm, the cost of fuel goes up significantly, home heating fuel, gasoline, diesel goes up, then you're looking at a very rapid move to recession, even in Europe. So if you take out United States in recession, which more and more looks likely, China, which will be in recession for the next two quarters, and then you add in Europe, you tell me where the price of oil is going. I think we're in Looney Tune values right now in the 80s. We're down about $3 today because of the data coming out. And the data has been out there for 5 or 6 weeks. This is not a new phenomenon. It's been ignored because the bulls were looking at what was going on in Europe and the high prices. And they were, and you've heard, you know, some of the major banks in the States calling for 120 for WTI in Q2. As you said, Mexico is hedging at much lower levels. I'm in the camp that we're going to break 60 in the first half of 2022. Not 120. So, you know, that's the bulls versus the bears argument. And my view is there's sufficient oil around the world right now. OPEC will continue to bring on. They have 5 million barrels of excess capacity right now. And the United States and China have a hammer, and that is their strategic reserves. And so if OPEC, if their countries are going into recession, and OPEC says, oh, we're not going to bring on 400,000 barrels a day, you know, because there is recession coming, so we want to keep supplies tight, the Americans and China can increase and open up their strategic reserve. The Secretary of Energy in the States has already, you know, proposed that. China is already doing that. And if they open up sufficient so that they stop importing from OPEC, all they have to do to say to OPEC is, okay, you want high prices? Good, we're not buying any from you. You tell me what the price is going to be a few months later.
So, Joseph, are you shorting the sector then? Is this the opportunity that you've been waiting for, where the data might finally be taken into account by the investors and we might see a dramatic pullback in the sector?
I believe we will see a dramatic pullback just because of the weakening of the U.S. and the Chinese economy. The wild cards are the weather, as we talked, Nord Stream 2, and all these other things. So if we have a very, you know, significant cold spell in December, January, and Nord Stream 2 has not got the approval because the left-wing Greens in Germany have said no, then all of a sudden we're going to see another price spike up. But if, on the other hand, you see Europe go into recession as well as the United States and as well as China, then sometime in February, March, after the worst of winter is over, we're going to see prices of crude go down $20 or $30 for WTI and Brent. WTI for January is already below 80, we're just over 80 for the December contract. But I think that as more evidence comes out of recession, you have no monetary stimulus from the Fed. In fact, you have monetary, you know, removal of $15 billion a month, and you have no fiscal approval of those two two proposals from Biden, then all of a sudden you've removed fiscal stimulus, you're removing monetary stimulus, and you've got an American economy in recession, and you've still got, of course, supply chain issues, and you've got, China making sure that, the air quality stays good, which means not spending a lot of money on oil and gas or allowing driving or whatever, or their coal-fired facilities to produce electricity. That just sets up for Q1, Q2 to be pretty ugly economically. And, oil prices, if you remember, in Q2 of 2018 had the same robust story, or 2008 that we have, we had just recently, where, oh, OPEC's not producing enough, demand is growing, the economy is recovering, COVID is over, we have the reopening trade. And in the second quarter of 2008, we were in the 140s and everybody was calling for $200 oil and everything was perfect. And you had no excess supply available by OPEC. And so you had all the things going on. Well, we all know something happened in the second half of 2008 and you know, slowdown in the U.S. economy. The bubble burst on housing. The bubble burst on low quality loans. The banks got into trouble, and then we had to have the support package. I think the economy in the States and China going negative is more than enough to knock the price of oil down $20-$30. So we really, if you want to knock off my thesis, you've got to say, okay, show me the data on the U.S. economy that it's growing, not declining, and show me the same for China. And I don't think the evidence is there to support the bullish case.
That's a great point, Joseph, and we'll have to see how the economy of the U.S. and China does it. There are a lot of cautionary red flags coming up now that we could be getting near that same kind of a recessionary period. Just pivoting over to the...
One thing to keep an eye on is Friday's employment report. I think a lot of people after, I think it was 193,000 in the last month's report, and people are using between 350 and 500 for this month's report. Tomorrow we'll get the ADP data, and then Friday you'll get the U.S. Jobs data. And if that jobs data is sluggish, in other words, people not wanting to work or people have been laid off because they won't get vaccinated, if that number's at the lower end, that's going to be proving the recession case. And a shocker would be if that number went negative. I don't believe it will, but if it was a negative number, a loss of jobs, that would shock the market.
Absolutely. Well, just pivoting over to the oil companies real quick, there was an announcement out today that said the big five, Exxon, Chevron, Shell, BP, and Total Energies, are set to increase their combined CapEx programs in 2022, next year, by at least $12 billion. So do you see in the oil companies a desire to finally invest in growth, and do you see that being good for the oil companies moving into next year?
Well, many of the companies are still repairing their balance sheets. So you've still got a large number of companies that are announcing that they want to knock their debt over. I was on the Gran Tierra call yesterday, and they talked about the knocking off debt by, $40 million, in the quarter, and they want to knock off their, some of their debt by another $200 million. They're in the $735 million U.S. They want to get that number down below $500 million. And that would be 1.5 times debt to cash flow. And then they'd start looking at shareholder returns. In the meantime, they want to grow production by reactivations and water floods so that they can get their production volumes up. And that's their approach. You've seen Crescent Point, announce that their numbers are going to be okay, but they're not growing very much. But then you have others, and we're going to see tomorrow with Tourmaline. Their numbers are going to be very strong. We saw Whitecap's numbers being quite strong. And so I think we're going to see many of the Canadian companies that have decent balance sheets. The rig count is showing it, where activity is picked up and the number of, wells being drilled is picking up, that we're going to be, and more so for the oily side than for the natural gas side. And remember, Enbridge Line 3 is open. So you've got, and that new pipeline that's going to be reversed in the States will take more oil down to the Gulf Coast. So you've got no real delivery problems or transportation issues for the next while. And then, of course, TMX in a few years as well, that you're going to see the company spend more money to bring on more production because transportation is no longer the ugly problem that the industry faced in the last number of years.
Yeah, very interesting. Let's see how it all plays out, but it just has been interesting to see just how much the oil price has stayed resilient and has really had this uptrend. Yes, it's faded for the last couple trading days, but hey, who knows if that's actually going to be longer term weakness or simply just another dip that is bought and pushes oil higher. But you do outline a number of issues with the oil sector and arguments against a continued bullish case here. Joseph, always great having you on the show, buddy. We'll chat again in about a month's time. I hope you have a great rest of your week and keep us up to date on any key moves in the oil sector, please.
My pleasure.